With the caveat that the president is, in many ways, his own economic advisor, we will sit down today with a guy whose job it actually is, National Economic Council Director Larry Kudlow, on the program this afternoon from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Washington, D.C. today, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday, everybody, August the 3rd. Good as always to have you along. A little something different on the program this afternoon. Yes, we will wrap up the week that was, because of course. But first, a scene setter of sorts for that discussion. A detour to the second floor of the West Wing of the White House and the office of Larry Kudlow, the chief economic advisor to President Trump. It's not especially big, Kudlow's office, but it is in the White House, so there's that. He works at a long conference table, papers spread everywhere, covered with comments written in blue Sharpie and on yellow sticky notes. The rest of the office, that's pretty sparse, not much on the bookshelves, only one painting on the wall, a still life by his wife, it turns out. It's almost like he hasn't finished moving in yet, really. Larry Kudlow is 70 years old. He is just back from a recent mild heart attack, but as you will hear, very much engaged with President Trump's economic agenda. We started around lunchtime when we sat down with the business and financial headline of the day.
You know, these are the best numbers in 10 years, but...
Which numbers are these? Are they just the straight-up unemployment numbers?
All these numbers. Look, the year-to-year wages, average hourly earnings, 2.8, average weekly earnings, 3.0.
You're barely keeping up with inflation.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think they should be stronger. This is my take. We are moving into a capital goods boom.
Explain that a little bit.
Very important point. Businesses are investing in new plants, equipment, everything that businesses invest in. You're starting to see a real takeoff now.
They're also that. Well, we're starting to see a takeoff. We're starting to see a real takeoff in the 10th year of an economic expansion. Is that what you're saying?
I don't really think we had a 10-year economic expansion. In fact, what we had was not only the weakest recovery, but in the old days, we would call it a growth recession, meaning 2% or less is a growth. Right. It may be growing,
but it's fundamentally
a recession. Yeah. And any little thing could knock it down. And that's basically what you had. So most recoveries of any depth or duration have a big rise in capital goods in business investment.
Yeah.
This one did not. The business tax cut we designed during the campaign was expressly aimed at creating incentives for businesses to invest. The terminology, as you may know, is capital stock. Yeah. We want them to invest in the capital stock. The capital stock leads to productivity, output per hour, right?
Yeah, which we should say has been stuck in this economy for a decade or more.
Yeah, call it 10 years, been about zero.
Yeah.
That's fair. And from the capital stock and the productivity comes the wage increases.
So you're betting on the come here. You're betting that companies are going to spend, workers are going to be more productive, and then we're going to get wages.
I like what I see. I mean, the numbers on cap goods are very impressive. While you're asking, I'll sift through my notes, but very good. And in fact, the first and second quarters, here we are. I'll give you some numbers.
We should say here, you're not a desk guy. You're a spread out on a table guy with lots of papers.
Yeah, I like to roam around and have some fun. Non-residential structures. This is really interesting. In other words, not housing, but factories or campuses, whatever they're called today. In my day, they were called factories. 13% in Q2, 14% in Q1.
Those
are big numbers.
I get that you like this and that you're a numbers guy.
And look, this goes directly to your point. If you say to me, I'm betting on it, you're right. I am betting on it. But I'm saying to you, we now are seeing several quarters where it's happening. That's important.
Gotcha. Let me pull you back out of the weeds then and ask you the follow-up question, which goes like this. We've had several quarters of this. We've also had a huge fiscal stimulus with the tax bill, right? We've had the president's, right?
I don't like that term, fiscal stimulus.
Well, how do you prefer to call it?
Lower marginal tax rates.
Fair enough. Companies paying lower taxes. That's fine.
It's an incentive. The argument here is free market supply side economics. If it pays more to invest after tax, people will invest.
So
that's what you got here.
So here's what we have in looking at it. It's a
not traditional
way.
Demand stimulus.
Well, and you're a supply side guy from way back, and you believe this, and history has its own judgment on this. But let me ask you the sort of related question to where we started. You've got companies in this economy doing really, really well, right? Profits are good. They're buying back their own stock. The stock market is up. Everything appears to be great. But when do workers start to see this?
Well, I was trying to answer that. Not sure. You want to go back through this?
Well, let me ask it a different way.
I mean,
right?
Try me again, because you asked, that was your lead question, which is fine. And my answer was, wages are rising now about 3%.
That's barely keeping up with inflation. That was my counterpoint.
Yeah. So inflation is running about 2%. So that's okay. But I think it'll get better. And the reason I think it'll get better is we're in a capital goods boom. And capital goods boom, in my way of thinking, will generate the kind of productivity which will in turn lead to higher wages. Now, the cap goods boom also is a big job creator, which is important. But we'll get those numbers, those wage numbers up. At least that's my outlook.
Fair enough.
And I don't, by the way, see anything particularly in the way of inflation pressures. I just don't see it.
Yeah, and neither does the Fed or pretty much anybody, right? So that's fine. Let me change gears then and talk about something else that I'm sure is on the mind of many economists in this building and elsewhere. This 4.1% quarter GDP growth that we had, as you nod. Whole lot of factors led to that, some of which were related to the tax law, some of which were related to the president's stand on trade now. The question is, 4.1% this quarter, or the most recent quarter, what's it going to be next quarter?
Before I venture into that treacherous...
Oh, no, go ahead.
I know people have tried to belittle that 4%.
No, let's be clear here. The president deserves a victory lap on the 4.1%.
But the idea that it was trade-related, where people were buying soybeans ahead of the tariffs, we'll know more about that when we get the subsequent revisions, when they show you the sectors.
Yep.
That's a hypothetical of a hypothetical. I just want to say that. That's unknown. If the soybean factor is in fact the case, it will be a very small
Let's
issue.
Be clear here. It's more than soybeans, right? It's Americans moving to export more ahead of the tariffs. It's getting stuff in the country ahead of the tariffs.
No. The biggest of the swing factors, which are trade and inventories, the biggest one was a $27 billion drop in inventories, which took over a percentage point out of real GDP. And that's cool for a number of reasons. That sets you up for some really big GDP numbers.
Okay, so
really kind of fun GDP numbers.
Here comes the put up or shut up question that you ducked a minute ago. What's your number?
The administration is predicting officially 3% and change.
For next quarter.
For the next bunch of quarters. Actually, for the next bunch of years, okay? It's going to be big. We're going to see big numbers.
All right, we're going to come back and see you in 90 days. We're going to come back and see you in 90
days. Big numbers.
I don't want to get too
big
political.
Big numbers.
I don't want to get too political
now,
about
this. Now, they'll accuse me of leaking numbers. I'm just giving you a sense of where I think things are going.
Understood. Let me ask you this, though. What if, in the next couple of quarters, you're wrong?
Mm.
As you know, we're heading into the midterms. What spitball that for me?
Well, the midterms, we're going to get one more GDP number before the midterms. It's going to be a great number.
So there you go. We'll call Larry Kudlow back, I guess, on Election Day. More from him in the second half of the program. We will talk trade and tariffs on Wall Street this Friday. It was fine. You know, we'll have the details when we do the numbers. As you heard, Mr. Kudlow likes to get into the nitty-gritty of economic policy. We, however, like to be a bit more contextual, so we are going to be. To help us do that, we've got Catherine Rempel. She's the Washington Post. Rachel Abrams is with the New York Times. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Kai.
Hey.
So, Catherine, let me go to you first. So much to talk about from what Ms. Kudlow said about the news of the day. The unemployment report, of course, 157,000 new jobs, 3.9% on the rate. I want to touch base on this capital goods boom that he is expecting, right? Companies spending oh so much more and wages going up. Do you buy that?
Well, he did mention that we've had some good numbers in terms of private investment. The mm-hmm. question is what's driving those numbers and how sustainable is all of that, right? I mean, capital availability has been pretty cheap the last few years. Mm-hmm. That does not seem to have been the limiting factor here. Companies can get capital, at least in recent history, right? Companies can get capital through equity financing. Interest rates have been low. So in fact, you think that the limiting factor, if the reason why they're not investing in more equipment and factories and whatever else is that they can't get the money, then that sort of puts a damper on that theory. If, in fact, you think the issue is that they don't actually see enough opportunities out there, or they don't think there's enough sufficient demand for whatever stuff their factories would produce, then that tells you a different story. And that gives more credence to, in fact, the demand side of things, which is what Larry Kudlow pushed back on when you talked about the idea of a fiscal stimulus, a demand side fiscal stimulus. Right. So I think all of that, based on what we know, and based on all of the forecasts that we've gotten out from the Fed, from CBO, from the IMF, it looks like we're seeing more of a demand side stimulus here, and that's what's driving the growth in the second quarter, and that's what's going to drive growth this year. But then we'll eventually see it fade.
So, Rachel, let me get you to the wages part of this. I circled back on it a couple of times with Mr. Kudlow, and he basically said, it's going to happen. I'm confident it's going to happen. You've been doing a bunch of reporting on wage growth, talking to people. What are they feeling, and how long do they think they're going to have to wait?
You know, it's interesting. I got an angry reader email saying, why do you keep saying that the recession is over? My wages haven't gone up. I haven't gotten a pay increase. You know, and I think that really gets to the sentiment out there. You'll notice that Mr. Kudlow did not give you a when, right? You really want a when. When are people going to see this in their paychecks? And I think part of the answer is that even though unemployment is really low and there have been pockets of labor shortages, we don't have enough truckers, for example, or people working in it's not a nationwide trend. We're not seeing labor shortages everywhere, which would drive pay up. That's only one ingredient. That's not the main answer. But even when there are labor shortages, weird things happen. There aren't enough people in restaurants, for example, but even there, in this low wage industry, there's been a lot of wage stagnation. So even when you don't have enough workers, people aren't necessarily automatically paying people more to incentivize them to come. I would argue that the labor shortage part of this is a big point.
Right. Catherine, really quickly on the way out here, this idea of gross domestic product in the coming quarter, the phrase that comes to mind is whistling past the graveyard, right? Because a lot of this was induced by tariffs and by the tax cut and people spending that money that now they're getting used to not having anymore. I want to call him back in 90 days and say, so how are we doing, sir, you know?
Yeah, well, he said that this idea that soybeans were driving it or were a big factor was imagined, but actually it wasn't. The BEA said in its technical documentation that soybeans were a big driver here. And you could imagine that other kinds of exports were pulled forward because companies were trying to front run the tariffs. That we will probably see a reversal of, or if we see a reversal of it, I should say, we'll see it in the near future, later this year. This question of fiscal stimulus, that kind of temporary sugar high, that could last for another year or so. And in fact, that's, again, what the Fed and CBO and other outfits expect to happen. So the White House could continue to claim credit for 3% growth. That's what all these forecasters are expecting this year. That does not mean that in the long run that will be sustainable.
Right. And that has to go toward the election question. I asked him right at the end there. Anyway, Catherine Rampell at The Washington Post, Rachel Abrams at The New York Times. Thanks, you two.
Thanks, Guy.
Thanks.
Have a nice weekend. Coming up,
zero tariffs, zero barriers, zero subsidies.
That is what winning the trade war looks like. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up about 0.5% today, 136 points, 25,462. NASDAQ up 0.1%, 9 points,
78.12. The S&P 500 picked up 0.4%, 13 points, 28 and 40. For the 5 days that were, the Dow ticked up a fraction of 1%. The NASDAQ took home 0.9%. S&P 500, 0.7% to the good. Things are all shook up at Shake Shack. Shares in the burger chain got fried after it said it would delay openings of new restaurants. Stock was down 11%. One reason, and if you were listening to Rachel a minute ago, you know this, not enough workers in restaurants. You're listening to Marketplace.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Slaboff from Columbus, Indiana. Make Me Smart and Marketplace are two of my favorite shows, both pushing me to think outside of my normal boundaries and making issues important to me that I wouldn't have considered before. I became a Marketplace investor because I feel it's important to vote with your dollar for media that makes a difference in the world. To join me as a Marketplace investor, donate today in whatever amount works for you at marketplace.org.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. We are going to go back to the White House now. Larry Kudlow's office on the second floor of the West Wing. His official title is Director of the National Economic Council. He's been on the job since the beginning of April. That's about a month after President Trump announced that first set of steel and aluminum tariffs. Since then, of course, tariffs have become the 2018 economic story of this administration, with new developments almost daily, including today. So that's where we're going to pick it up.
I want to go to the other news of the day, which is trade-related, and the Chinese coming back with their new suggested tariffs in response to our new suggested tariffs. There's been much this week of, well, maybe the Treasury Department's talking to the Chinese, and then yesterday or 2 days ago, the president ordered Trade Representative Lighthizer to actually look into raising tariffs. What is the tariff policy at the moment? Could you give some clarity on that?
Be specific. Which tariff policy?
Specifically, the tariff policy with the Chinese.
Okay. Happy to talk about that.
But doesn't it say something that you have to ask me which tariff policy we're talking about?
Well, because we're dealing with several different countries, and each one has its own story or several different blocks. For example, last week, against all odds and expectations, we entered into a deal with the European Union.
Well, to be clear, the way it came across was we agreed to negotiate to talk about a deal with the Europeans.
No, we actually agreed. I wrote that.
Yeah.
I helped negotiate that. Yeah. And then the two presidents signed. It actually was quite specific in certain areas regarding liquid natural gas, soybeans, and taking a look at defense purchases. And the presidents agreed, my president, that as we move forward towards this zero tariff regime, which is what President Trump wants, and Juncker does too, zero tariff, zero non-tariff.
The head
tariffs,
of the European Commission, yeah.
My suggestion to the skeptics, read the final statement, because there's a lot in that statement that answers a lot of questions. Okay. And you will see a lot of specific topics and issues. You follow me?
Yes, sir.
That's important. So that's a big deal. And the EU, China wanted a deal with the EU. EU said, no, we want to deal with the United States. They are going to get it. And that puts China on the defensive. Also, we're very close to a deal with Mexico. And
don't we already have a deal with Mexico?
No.
Isn't it called NAFTA?
No. Well, that's the existing deal, which is being renegotiated. And we will have an agreement in principle very soon with Mexico. I personally think Canada will come on board, but that's not – I mean, none of this is done.
Let me
be
clear.
The Mexican thing is very close.
Are you prepared to make a deal with Mexico without Canada on the NAFTA renegotiation?
All I'll say is the president has indicated from time to time that he is perfectly happy with bilateral deals. So if a deal with Mexico is a deal with Mexico and Canada doesn't come on board – at least immediately, the president is okay with that. That's a bilat. And we would make, by the way, a bilat with Canada. Now, to be very clear, we will not leave NAFTA. We're not leaving NAFTA. But in terms of the renegotiations, President prefers bilaterals, by the way.
I want to go back to China for a minute, right? You said this morning, I think it was on Bloomberg, you said, you know, this Chinese response is they're weak.
It looked
weak to me. They're negotiating from a position of weakness.
Yes, it looked weak to me. I may be wrong about this, and we haven't yet gotten all the information, but here's the first point of weakness. Our last tariff tranche proposal is $200 billion. And the president has asked our trade team, Bob Lighthizer, to explore the possibility of moving the proposed tariff from 10 to 25%.
Right.
Now, the China response, the tit for tat, was 60, as far as I know, just from sketchy news reports.
$60 billion worth of stuff.
Yeah. So that's a change from their prior strategy. Usually, if we named a number, they'd match the number.
But the point being,
I don't want to make that point too important. It just interested me.
Here's the larger point. Nobody seems to be backing down. Nobody seems to be saying, hey, let's talk about it, right?
That's correct.
You know, the Treasury Department let it be known the other day that Secretary Mnuchin was talking to the Chinese. And then you have said today and yesterday, nobody's talking to anybody. So what's going on?
I won't say nobody's talking to anybody. If Mr. Mnuchin told you he's had a conversation, he's had a conversation. I'm going to leave that up to him. All I'll say is virtually nothing has happened in a trade dialogue with China in a month or 6 weeks. And if the Chinese think that we're going to somehow back off, they better think again, because we're not.
We had a Republican congresswoman from Indiana on the program yesterday. Her name is Jackie Walorski. She's from the Indiana 2nd. And I said to her,
from the what?
Indiana 2nd Congressional District, right? She's a Republican, went heavily for the president in the election. She supports the idea of a new trade regime under this president. But I said to her, tell me what your constituents are saying. And this is Elkhart, Indiana, right? They make RVs. They make all those things that depend on steel. And she said, people are coming to her saying, we want to know when it's going to stop. When's it going to stop? The tariffs and the pain that is happening to American companies and consumers from these tariffs.
Look, I appreciate, I don't have to know this House member, but you know, I appreciate the concern. Absolutely. But I will say, so far, the pain has been de minimis, really very little.
Well, look, sir, really, with all respect, that's easy for you to say, sitting here on the second floor of the West Wing of the White House.
Now, don't class warfare me or anything like that. I'm telling you, quantitatively, we follow this very closely because we are concerned about it. There is very little impact, almost unmeasurable impact, on real GDP. Okay? That's a fact. It may be out there. I don't want to predict U.S.-China relations on trade, but I'm just saying, thus far, in GDP terms, it's been nothing, unmeasurable. Now, some farmers have been hurt. Probably the soybean area has been the clearest and hardest hit. Soybean prices are off about 20%. I'm going to even that out. I'm going to sell so many bushels of soybeans to Europe that I'm going to take the price back to $10 and take China out of the calculus. We are prepared to help the farmers if we need to, as president has indicated. We could come to their rescue for a considerable sum of money. Thus far, it's not necessary. I personally don't think it's ever going to be necessary, but my crystal ball is not perfect here. Other than that, I just don't see anything yet. I mean, look, President Trump is a growth candidate. Healthy economy is his number one priority domestically. He inherited a broken world trading system where tariffs and particularly non-tariff barriers have been rising for years. So the president is trying to fix it. He is a free trader. He is, you know, he and I worked out zero tariffs, zero barriers, zero subsidies. I can't be any clearer than that.
Is that what winning the trade war looks like?
Well, I think so. Ultimately, if we can get to that point, yes, that would be a tremendous win. And look, to me, that would be incredibly pro-growth. It is consistent with all of his other actions on taxes and regulations.
Larry Kudlow, thanks for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
We talked for about 25 minutes, Larry Kudlow and I did. Technically, I think it was 26. You can hear the whole thing and peruse the transcript, should you so choose, at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, just because, you know, you haven't had enough trade and tariff policy yet. This item from General Motors. They've got an SUV that they make in China. It's called the Envision. About 80% of the 250,000 Envisions that GM makes every year are sold in China, but about 40,000 or so of them are imported over here. Figure out where I'm going with this story yet? Yeah, it turns out GM has applied to the Commerce Department for an exemption to the president's 25% tariffs on the cars that GM, an American automaker, wants to import to the American auto market. All right, we are out of here. Dow Industrials up about 0.5% today, 136 points. NASDAQ up 10%, 9 points there. S&P 500 picked up 0.4%, 13 points. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Our executive editor is Evelyn LaRubia. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. Have a great weekend, everybody. We will see you back in L.A. on Monday. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.